Welcome, everybody, to an episode of Shoujo Bonus Episode. It's our one-year anniversary, and we are finally going to cover Jurassic Park, the first movie in the Jurassic Park series of movies, of which I just learned recently they're going to make another one. So we will have plenty of other Jurassic Parks to watch, but we're starting off with the very first one from 1993.
Great year.
I'm
great
joined things. By Sarah.
Came out in 1993. And great things came out in 1993, including me. Me and Jurassic Park. We're birthday twinsies.
Damn. Banger year, huh?
Yeah.
I came out, you know, in 94, I guess.
Nah.
Debuted. Wow. Ugh.
No.
Eight even numbered years.
It's happening. Yes.
It's happening.
Park.
We're here. We made it. We made it a whole year. Can you believe it? We release an episode every week, more or less on time, every year.
Yeah,
every year. Every week for a year.
Forget about there's a slight delay this time last week, but
we've been making our our setup keeps changing so that like increases the edit time. So don't worry about it. But don't worry about it. Because we're here now for our bonus year one episode.
Yes.
Sarah, why did we watch Jurassic Park?
Because I'm, like, obsessed with it. And, you know, if, like, one of us is already into it, it makes it easier for us to get around to doing a bonus episode. Because we're already so busy and, like, have been saying, oh, we'll do a bonus episode. And then we just have done maybe two. And so this is... And I'm the lazy one of the two, so, like, making it easier for me makes it more likely to happen. We should do more bonus episodes. You edit them. I don't know why. We should just do them all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We reverse our roles here, right? So I'm hosting or doing the intro. And I also have to edit. And you, I assume, just did a perfect summary.
We'll
even though
see.
I also did a summary, just in case.
I know, I feel very bad now. You can still do it if you want. I just don't.
No, you can't. I was just writing this down. It's part of my notes. It's how I remember stuff that's happening.
Okay.
I'm so used to doing it at this point that...
My notes are like, music, incredible. Typeface, perfect. Very short notes in comparison. Oh, man.
Yeah, so we're here. So what is your history with Jurassic Park? Why are you so into it?
Let's see. My mom, she was like 8 months pregnant and she got to cut the line because this was a blockbuster back in the day when people had to wait in line to get to the movies. And so because she was super preggers, she got to skip the line. And I like to say, I've been watching Jurassic Park since I was in the womb. Like, I was just watching it from the belly button when she was in theaters or something. And just for, like, as long as I can remember, this has been my favorite movie. And I, like, with certainty know it will always be my favorite movie. I think just, I don't know what initially, you know, Cool Dinosaurs is probably what drew me to it initially as a child. And probably, like, the message of the movie has, like, shaped a lot of my opinions about things. And so, like, I super identify with the movie because I grew up watching the movie. So it just, like, ticks all the boxes for me. And it's fun to watch, you know, because I have memories of what I thought things in the movie were happening. And then as an adult, I'm like, wow, dumb kid me. It was so wrong. But, like, I can remember learning more about this movie, even though I've seen it so many times. Like, the viewing experience can change so much for the same thing. Like, this is the first time I've watched it with closed captions, which has been very enlightening. And, yeah, just the first time I'm watching this more critically. But yeah, you know, I've got all the knickknacks. I for my 30th birthday, my golden birthday, I went to Universal Studios in Florida because they are having a 30th anniversary tribute store. So I went to that, and I don't know, Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum and Laura Dern, they're so good. All the fashion and the movie definitely influenced my love of denim and paisley throughout my life. And I just, I'll talk about more like specific things where I'm like, wow, as a child, I very much absorbed this message and stuff like that. How about you, Joe? How's your same level of adoration for this movie as me, right?
I've definitely seen Jurassic Park. I probably watched it on TV. I might have seen part of The Lost World. And then I think I've seen the third one because we had that one on VHS. It's about dinosaurs. I remember that. I remember the water thing.
The water thing. Oh, the like the hand dropping. The tremor water.
The tremor water. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like I know that's a famous thing. Mm-hmm. I know some of the lines, and that's about it. I don't really have much of any relationship with Jurassic Park. I watched the first one of the like Jurassic World reboot things, and I thought it was okay, and then I didn't watch any of the rest of them.
Yeah, we'll get to
that. That is my experience with Jurassic Park.
Oh, man. I know it's... A few days ago, we had like a company dinner, and my boss, to me, he's very intimidating because he's like so like busy and successful and made this whole thing and independent and blah, blah, blah. But like he used to work in like the movie industry. So I like... You know, liquid courage. I was like, what do you think about Jurassic Park? And he was like, yeah, that first one was pretty good. So I think even today, I feel like it still holds up. Well, we can talk more about like the effects and stuff. And there's like two notable goofy moments that age it a bit. But other than that, I feel like it still is like a great movie.
I'm going to mention some stuff about it.
Ooh, okay. Let's hear it.
If you want, because I was just looking at the Wikipedia for it. So first off,
spoiler alert. Park is,
this is just how it was made, right? So Jurassic Park, adapted from a novel. So the novel Jurassic Park, which was written by Michael Crichton, who, you know, was already like a big deal at the time when this came out. He wrote stuff like The Andromeda Strain and, The Terminal Man and stuff like that. So he was already a big deal. They acquired Steven Spielberg, who was the director of this movie, who at this time was also a huge deal because he'd made Jaws in 75, which became like the benchmark or like basically, yeah, it became like the blockbuster. That's what the modern blockbuster kind of starts with. And then, you know, you have stuff like Star Wars come out and then, you know, more things like that. So then Alien comes out and all sorts of stuff. Indiana Jones, those kind of things. Then E.T. comes out and that becomes like the highest grossing movie of all time for a long time. But Jurassic Park, the movie came out. So he actually acquired the rights to the book before the book was published.
That's right. Yep.
So that's pretty interesting. Well, came out 3 years later.
Because I think Michael Crichton like wrote for the movie ER, which Spielberg may have been involved with, and so that's where they had like a working relationship already. And then I think Crichton might have mentioned that he was working on this book, and then Spielberg, having been like into dinosaurs, like I call dibs basically, I think, if I remember correctly, is kind of how that happened.
Okay, if that makes sense, because it came out so close afterwards, and then Crichton didn't write the next novel until 95, so in the wake of the success of the movie.
Yeah, he actually, Spielberg specifically was like, hey, I want to make another Jurassic movie. So if you could write another book, that'd be great.
Yeah. This movie became the highest grossing movie of all time between when it came out in 93 and 97 when Titanic came out. It cost $63 million to make, according to Wikipedia, and made $1.06 billion, so enormous return on investment.
Yeah, they should have spent $65 million, so it was like $1 million for all the years since dinosaurs went extinct. Might as well just, you know, $65 million years ago, $65 million now, something. Nope. Okay, I'm not in the movie business. Continue.
That was pretty much it. I was just kind of going through, like, this was like a book that immediately became a movie. I didn't realize that it was like literally right back to back.
And you haven't read the book.
I have not read the book, no.
The book and the movie are maybe because... I don't know, like, if Spielberg was, like, making up in his mind certain things before they were finalized within the book, and that's why a lot of things are different between the book and the movie. Maybe we'll do a bonus episode on the book specifically, but mostly to do with the characters, which I guess I could see that changing just depending on, like, what actors and the chemistry and stuff anyways, but... It's a good book. The movie certainly is more like approachable entertainment versus the book being very much more technical, you know, Crichton being from like a medical background and stuff. It gets real nitty gritty on things like that and more explicit with the morbid elements for sure. But good book for definitely recommend.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Anything? Well, do we want to get into? I don't have anything else around.
All right. So how we do this? I'd just be like, let me tell you the entire story of Jurassic Park from the top of my head and
just talk from the top of your head. Are you telling me you don't have extensive notes? Well, do you want to give I feel like. If you're listening to this, I'm kind of assuming you've probably seen Jurassic Park before, but maybe do you want to give like a short summary? Can you give me a 5-sentence summary?
Okay.
This is a thing that like another podcast doesn't do. So off the dome, 5 sentences to describe what happens in Jurassic Park.
All right. So.
All right.
Rich man from Scotland who has dabbled in biological exhibits and stuff in the past, has a new endeavor underway that is super top secret. And it turns out it's resurrecting dinosaurs, basically. And there has been an incident where one of the workers in the park was killed. And so investors are concerned about the stability and the, like, you know, like sustainability of a park with such dangerous attractions. And so they require that some experts of the dinosaur and just, I guess, like large scale operation fields sign off on the park and kind of give their like thumbs up in order for investors to continue investing. And so we have Dr. Grant, who is a paleontologist, and then his girlfriend and co-worker, or Ellie Sattler, who is a paleobotanist, and then also a chaos mathematician named Ian Malcolm joins along, and basically they get dragged there. Ooh, cool, dinosaurs, this and that. Okay, this is longer than 5 sentences. Sorry.
This is one sentence because you just keep saying and.
Sorry.
So maybe like a little more brief.
Sorry. Okay. Shit goes down. People getting eaten. Like, oh man, this isn't going to work out, is it? We're just trying to get out of here alive. The end.
Okay, that was like 2.5 sentences, maybe.
Sorry. Do you have a better crack at it?
Do you want me to try? Okay, here's my shot. A rich guy named Hammond opens a park where they've resurrected dinosaurs and has to get audited for safety because people keep dying at his dinosaur park.
I guess that's more like premise rather than giving the whole movie.
Grant, okay. Dr. Grant, his girlfriend / collaborator, Dr. Sadler. And is Ian a doctor? I don't even know if he is.
He's a mathematician, chaos.
Rockstar mathematician, Ian Malcolm, all come to audit the park. And also Hammond's grandkids are also there to take a tour at the same time. Also happening is corporate espionage where main IT guy named Dennis is going to steal dinosaur embryos and bring them to a competitor. So he sabotages the park to shut down all of the security apparatuses so he can do that and run away. A storm comes, and that messes everything up, but it knocks all the power out because the program runs, but also things fail because of the storm. That releases all of the dinosaurs' security locks, and everybody is being hunted by dinosaurs. A lot of people get eaten that aren't that important, and Grant and the kids and Sadler and everybody who's cool makes it off the island in a helicopter, and also Grant learns to become a dad at the end.
Okay. Excellent.
That's my five sentence.
Okay. Oh, were you like counting sentences there?
Yeah, I was counting
Look
sentences.
Look at your brain being able to do multiple things at once. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Should we walk through it? So, like, I'm assuming, because I haven't read the book, I'm assuming all the stuff with Dr. Grant and the kids is like a thing Spielberg added?
No. So...
Oh, okay.
It's kind of... Right, okay. It's been a hot second since I read the books, and I've only read it once. But if I remember correctly, one, Dr. Grant is significantly older than... Dr. Sattler, and they are not dating. Like, she may be like hot for teacher, but I don't think they're actually dating in the books.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, he's totally fine with kids. In the books, the son or the boy Tim is older than the girl Lex. She's not a hacker. She's like into baseball.
Oh.
And like, she's the annoying little sibling. And there's a lot of like differences with characters between like Hammond. Not likable in the books at all.
Okay.
Dr. Wu plays more of a role. The lawyer, actually kind of nice. Stuff like that are like different elements. And it definitely leans into the chaos theory. Because I guess it's like the whole controlling this thing and like,
The book is like,
of it. Yeah,
it's like much more of like a sci-fi kind of book, right? Like it cares about like the mechanics of how things
yeah,
work
like
and like
yes.
the biology and that stuff, right? Okay,
yes,
because that's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so
I assume most of those character changes had to be because of like who they casted, right?
I'm assuming it's also. Well, one thing I really appreciate about this movie, and like as a kid, you know, dumb kid, I was like, oh, I didn't realize in the movie that Alan and Ellie are a couple because they like never have like on screen intimacy, really.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the obvious familiarity between them and like, you don't have
well,
to
grabs
be,
his,
which
he
I,
grabs
I appreciate
at the beginning.
Okay, well, I was a kid.
Yeah.
But okay,
it's like for
but
half a second.
Yes, but so I don't know. It's refreshing to have like sure there can be like a couple, but it doesn't have to be like a huge factor because this is a movie about dinosaurs and not like a if and whenever we cover the Jurassic World movies, we can get more into it. But like, it doesn't take away like we don't have to take time away from because obviously there's a very clear line of like Ellie wants children and Grant doesn't, and they're together, and she's like, you know. Probably into it in the hopes that he wants kids because she does, and so to be together and for it to work, stuff like that. But should we get?
Yeah, you want to just go through it now?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Here we go.
Do you want me to go through it?
Watch
or are you
me. No, I'm gonna do it. Okay.
Okay.
So, opening Universal logo bumper plays.
Really gonna go into your like mind palace, like you're gonna pull out each individual frame.
Yes, we hear the sound of like jungle and like night insects creaking and stuff, and then we cut. It's night in a jungle, and what we know is now Costa Rica area, island off of Costa Rica. Maintenance workers with Jurassic Park, you know, helmets and stuff. Clearly. This is like setting up an enclosure for one of the dinosaurs, unloading it. So there's the crate with the animal in it. It gets lowered. It's, you know, tasers galore. Like they're anticipating having to use those things. So they go to like connect the crate to the enclosure. An accident happens where the it's a raptor, a velociraptor inside. It kind of like disrupts the process, and so the one of the workers kind of falls in proximity to the raptor. It grabs hold of him. You know, we kind of see the struggle. We get glimpses of the raptor. You know, can't show off the cool monster right away. So, but basically, this is where we see that a worker of Jurassic Park loses their life. We immediately cut to Donald Gennaro, okay. Who is...
Hold on.
What? What?
I don't remember this opening scene at all.
What? Why?
Because it's boring? That's my note about this. I don't remember this at all.
When you watched
I don't know.
It.
I guess I haven't seen this. I was like watching this, and I'm like, this is the right movie, right? Like, what is all of this stuff? I don't remember any of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely as like a kid, it's kind of like what, okay, right? So I said I was watching in closed captions, so like I was reading the details a lot more of what they're saying. Because like you just kind of get the gist, like, oh, you know, shoot her, or whatever that line is. Robert Muldoon. This is where we see him. He's one of the bigger players within the movie, but clearly directing the whole thing and more familiar with the animals. Yeah, this is just to get, you know, they gotta like get
no,
some
I mean,
excitement
it's good scene
up
I
in
just
front.
Didn't
yeah,
it at all.
Yeah, I mean,
that was just my note. That's my only.
Yeah.
Note.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not like one that necessarily stands out to me. You know, it's nobody's favorite scene or whatever, but it does a good job, I think, of getting people excited.
Oh, I wasn't saying it was bad. I just don't remember it.
Yep. Okay. Also, enclosure seems tiny. Like,
yeah,
tiny. And they're trying to shove multiple raptors in there. Spare no expense, my ass.
Yeah, it's tiny.
But... Hey, okay, cut to Gennaro, who is just arrived to this dig site with, I guess, probably a paleontologist similar to Grant, who we'll meet in a second, but that does digs, probably providing that genetic material for Jurassic Park for Hammond to use, because he's very familiar with Hammond, and... basically covering for Hammond, who was supposed to meet with the lawyer to talk about this whole disaster that's falling out with the investors because of this worker's death and the family suing and stuff. And so from this conversation, we learn they need some experts to come in to vouch for it. The lawyer has one lined up, Ian Malcolm, but also trying to get Dr. Grant. And this digger is saying, no way, you can't get him out of Montana. He's, you know, he's really in it for the work, and he can't be, you know, persuaded to leave his dig site, blah, blah, blah. Cut to Montana, the dig site of Dr. Grant.
They also find the mosquito and Amber in that scene.
Well, they find a mosquito in Amber.
Well, yeah.
By this point, they must have encountered several, I guess. But yes,
but that's like the first clue you get.
Yes, mm-hmm. the imagery of the mosquito, and because that's going to be a thing we see a lot throughout the movie. And let's see. Yeah, the Grant and Ellie banter. You know, like very clearly. Together talking, yes, apparently that's a thing. They are digging up a new skeleton. I guess they're starting to implement some new tech that helps them like read the echo.
Yeah, they shoot like a little radar sensor into the ground with a thing that is like it uses like a bullet, like it's like a shell that fires into the ground and it shoots a little thing, and then they can like send out they can basically like
get a
printout of what's below. Yeah.
And so this is where we get introduced to a velociraptor, which, you know, we're setting up the kind of like animosity between Grant, our protagonist, and a raptor, which is going to be one of our main antagonists of like, you know, don't take this lightly. There's some punk ass kid at the park who's like heckling Grant. So Grant tears him a new one. And then Ellie's like, oh my God, dude, like chill the hell out, dude.
He like owns this child. This kid's like, you said this, like, because he's talking about how dinosaurs are like related to birds more than anything else, like more than like lizards or whatever. And some kid's like, what? So this thing's just like a big chicken. And then he like owns this kid. And it's like way excessive.
No, it's great. I will say that Dr. Grant is based off a real person who I believe his name is Jack Horner. But yeah, he is like, I think has had theories about the some dinosaurs like kind of evolving to avian stuff. And that's what it's based off of.
Jack Horner. Like the bad guy from Puss in Boots, the last
one. Oh, I don't. I think that's his name.
I mean, it could be.
Okay. Yeah. That's who Grant's based off of.
That makes sense.
So at least Crichton, you know, I guess it has some criteria. I've listened to a podcast with that guy talking and how they like tried to make some like chicken dinosaur hybrid. I can't remember. I feel like they called it a chickensaurus or something, but something you guys can look into later. Anyways, they get interrupted. Well, this is where Grant's like, ugh, gross, you want a kid? And this is where I, as a child, internalized, ew, gross children, who would want those? And then that shaped me as a person to this day
from the unreformed introduction of Dr. Grant.
I guess I admired him a lot, and
but not at the end of the movie where he's cool with kids.
Well, that's just the end of the first movie. They just wanted to end it, tie it with a nice ribbon, but
okay,
saga continues. Anyways, they're chatting, they get interrupted because there's a helicopter coming, which is, you know, obviously in the Badlands of Montana, blowing up dirt and stuff, which is interfering with the dig site. So they're pissed. So they go into the trailer where the, you know, the passenger of the helicopter is. It turns out to be John Hammond, who funds their site and is telling them, you know, hey, I will give you a ton of money. I will give you funding for 3 more years of this dig site if you agree to come to this island of this thing that I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to very vaguely be like, oh, yeah, you guys should come check this thing out. Sure, Sattler, you can come too. I didn't come for you, but you can come too, I guess. And, you know, I'm assuming it's very difficult probably to get funding for sites like this that they were like, okay. And we cut
3 years to funding.
Copter. Yeah. We cut to the introduction of Ian Malcolm, the lawyer Gennaro, Hammond, Ellie, and Alan all in the copter riding to the island together. Ian Malcolm already hitting on Sattler.
Dude, the fact that he's a cool mathematician is so funny.
Yeah,
he's like, ooh, he's like a cool celebrity mathematician. Like,
no one makes transitional glasses hotter than Ian Malcolm, am I right?
He's wearing like all black.
Yes, he's a character. And this is setting up that the lawyer is like brought Malcolm kind of be more critical, like, oh man, get ready, like we gotta really investigate this. And from the discussion, I'm learning that Malcolm has been aware of this island, because right, this is something I never caught without the captions before, but it sounds like Malcolm has been aware of this island before Grant or Sattler ever have been, because it sounds like there's some kind of history there of like Hammond saying something like, oh, you've never been a fan of this island or something like that, implying,
I assume, because the Donald, the lawyer, recruits Malcolm, he probably actually told him what the park was about, because he's normal.
Well, I'm assuming there's, like, the most insane NDAs. Oh, you mean,
well,
unlike us, where, like, Grant and Ellie have no idea what they're in for?
Yeah, because they don't know anything, because they're in the middle of Montana not paying attention to anything, right? Like, I'm sure there's, like, rumblings of this. And, you know, people work at this park. They probably have leaked stuff out, right? He probably knows that there's some kind of genetic engineering thing going on at this weird park. You might not know it's dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me if he knew something about it.
Hmm.
We skipped a scene.
Yes, yeah, so now it's the descent of the helicopter to the landing pad.
This well, we skipped a scene before this.
Oh, right. Sorry. Okay, so we cut to, I don't remember, somewhere in the general region, Costa Rica.
It's still in Costa Rica, yeah.
We cut to a man walking up to a table with this guy who we soon discover is named Dennis Nedry and is like the head, I don't know, automation engineer something or other for
yeah, he's like the software engineer, like lead architect.
Jurassic Park systems. And, you know, it's this guy is from a rival company. I don't recall if they say the name, but it's Biosyn is the name of this rival company. And they are paying Nedry to steal embryos from InGen, which is the company that Hammond owns. Because, and in the book, it sets it up that this is a company that's always been chasing the heels of InGen. And so this is like their chance to get ahead by stealing instead of, you know, like doing it themselves as corporate espionage, like you said earlier, and kind of talking Nedry through what the game plan is. The iconic Barbasol shaving cream can, which is a disguise for like how to transport the embryos. And to me, Nedry like makes a sound when like he does the little showing the hidden compartment. He has like this laughy shriek thing, but I'm like, oh my god, his laugh sounds like the like shriek of a raptor. Like he gets so high pitched on that little laugh thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Dude, Dennis is so into this. He's like so happy to be in like a James Bond movie.
Well, I'm assuming maybe he's some character, right? His whole job is like working behind the scenes, so he probably does not get like direct like acknowledgement as much, and so he's like eating this up. The whole like getting a huge bag of money and cool, yeah, spy stuff almost. And basically just griping that he doesn't make enough, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay, yes, and then we cut. So that sets up like the main like ongoing threat to the, in addition to just the dinosaurs being dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they land on the island. Sick ass Wrangler Jeeps decked out with the Jurassic Park branding. I want one so bad.
The branding is here.
Yes, it's so good. Good ass music. They drive away from the landing pad and they're going through the park, and we Hammond has the vehicle stop because we encounter a dinosaur.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
This is such a good scene, I think, because you have to imagine like all these actors are having to react to absolutely nothing because this is all CGI. But I feel like this is such a good scene, like they're just such a good job acting of the like, you know, slow-mo. Or maybe I just love this scene. It's not that good. But to me, I'm like, oh my god, I love this scene so much. But just the, like, shock and disbelief, kind of. And, you know, Ian's good little quips here and there. And our first, like, full-blown look at a CGI dinosaur. What do we think, Joe? How are the effects holding up? 30.
I mean, I think it holds up fine.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it's mostly this one's when, like, a full there's CG a human one. In the same shot that it makes it a bit more noticeable. But yeah, I feel like it's not distractingly old or anything. Like, you can still be in the scene in the moment. And yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part.
So this is a full CG dinosaur, right? Because they're not all. Because some of them are, like, practical.
Yes.
Right?
So, fun fact. Originally, Spielberg... And they started capturing, like, they were going to do stop motion animation for the dinosaurs originally. And so that was like a whole tedious thing that they had already started. And then there's this one guy at one of the effects companies that are kind of helping with it, who was like, that's dumb. We should do CGI. And so he like did a side project to basically build like a CGI T-Rex skeleton walking. And then he like planned it so that it would just happen to be playing on a screen as like one of the big important people walk past so that they would see it. And then be like, oh my God, you know, tell me more, whatever. And it worked. And so they like scrapped the original stop animation stuff and started with the CGI. But yes, they do still use a lot of practical effects. They had several like animatronic, like the T-Rex in the scene with the rain that we'll get to later. Like that's a whole thing. And they had a whole issue because like, the T-Rex started soaking up all the water, and then like the animatronic weighed so much more than it was supposed to, and it was having like technical issues and stuff. But yeah, so there's lots of, it's not like full reliance on CGI like it is now. And I think the practical effects definitely make it better than like.
Yeah, because the ones you mostly see.
Movies, yeah.
Because like the Velociraptors and the T-Rex, which is the ones you kind of see up close. And are usually like on screen at the same time as people. Those are both real, right? Or mostly real.
Yeah. Yes, I think like the raptor claw clicking when it's walking, stuff like that. That's all practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly just more the like far off or not. Like the triceratop, that's a whole built thing. Mm-hmm. The actors are getting to interact with that. The Dilophosaurus, I am guessing, is probably because it has like that moving sail thing, so that might be like weird to.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, but they did a pretty good job of like making it not super easy to tell. I mean, you can tell on like the big wide shots, right? Like this first one, you can definitely tell.
Yeah.
But
yeah. But yeah. So you know, 3 decades later, holds up pretty well. Practical effects rule, and we should still use them more to this day. Oh good lord, where was I? Okay, let me reference your notes here.
Let's see, they find a dinosaur close up, they go to the main building, John gives a presentation about cloning.
Yeah. So they have this whole ride moment
halfway through.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, so we go to the visitor center, which also I'm like, wow, this set feels small now. I'm like, this all feels very small. I don't know what like the original intended capacity for the park would have been. Like how many people would come and stay, because it feels all very like intimate. But maybe I'm just comparing this to like the new movies where everything is like a huge, massive scale.
Well, they talk later on how like they didn't even know what the price the tickets at, and it was gonna be really expensive. At the beginning, yeah, I don't think they like scaled up necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I guess maybe there's like limitations because they're like leasing this island from the Costa Rica government. So like they could have a lot of restrictions on what number of people they're allowed to bring and stuff. These are the kind of details that I don't remember, but probably are explored within the book. Like the book talks a lot about the like how this all runs kind of details. But yeah, they get to the visitor center and Hammond has them do the whole, like what they plan on having people do when the park is live. Like, here's how we did it, guys. Where it's like a little, you know, sit in the row. It's going to like pan to all the different rooms within the visitor center, you know, the like cloning lab, the control room, stuff like that. But Grant, Ellie, and Ian, well, Ian's kind of just tagging along with those two, the ones who are actually interested in how this works, because he just doesn't want to hang out with Hammond and the lawyer, I don't think. But they're like, we want to see that. We're going to be rude and, like, interrupt this presentation that we're adults and should be expected to be able to sit through and wait patiently. But no, we're going to, like, ditch the freaking like orientation thing and just go to the lab where the eggs, the, you know, incubation stuff is set up. And so they do that.
And but this ride that they're in really reminds me of the Living with the Land ride at Disney World at Epcot, the one where you like are in a little boat that like goes through the different gardens and stuff like that, because you can see people working in it sometimes, and it's like the same kind of thing.
Yes. Oh yeah, there's a funny part where the lawyer Gennaro's like, is that auto erotica, when he meant to say like animatronics.
It was really weird.
Oh, man. Yes. He's just kind of a like very clearly out of his element and not I don't know. They call him the blood sucking lawyer. Like, he's set up to be like not very likable and stuff. He's just kind of a whatever dude, though. He's not like, he's just a
He's like very
he's
like
just a body. He's a body.
He's like a corporate money grubber kind of guy, right? Because he's worried about the insurance thing because they're going to sue him for a lot of money. And then as soon as he sees the park, all he can do is talk about how much money they're going to make off of it.
Yes. I'm like, dude, calm down. So they go to the lab. We have Dr. Henry Wu, who is one of the geneticists, and a voice actor from Mulan. He plays Shang, or he's the romantic interest.
Our bisexual favorite.
Yes, that guy. So fun little tidbit. The movie, he has a very minor role. Like, this scene is basically it. This is all he's in. But in the book, he has a much more important part to play. But basically, eggs are about to hatch. Okay, this is where I'm like, oh my god, Hammond. Like, he's like, oh, I insist on being here for every creature born. And like, oh, they like trust me more if they imprint on me. I'm like, dude, I don't believe for a second that you're this involved in all this happening, or that like, you know, these animals, or, you know, like, I feel like he's it's like just a show to like sell the idea of it to these people. It's
Yeah, he's like a total narcissist about it, and Ian calls him out on it later. But
this is
the most you're like, okay, this guy is like really weird and like off.
Yes, well, he's delusional. You know, all he wants to think about the things he likes and not any of the other things, of which Ian, you know, is like, hey, how can you control all of this? You know, and Wu says that they have genetically altered the animals to only be female so that they can control breeding within the park. So, you know, to reduce any issues like that. And Ian, you know, this is the iconic, most iconic line of the movie, where he says, well, everyone says life finds a way, but Ian says life finds a way, kind of.
There it is. You're implying that a group composed entirely of female animals will breed?
No, I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
I just, all of Ian's little, like, you know, guys are messing with nature, like, it's doing its own thing, leave it be, like, has shaped me so much. Oh, it's getting me so much of my, like, nihilistic perceptions. But yeah, so it's very clear he's bringing up the point. You can tell that Sattler and Alan are kind of leaning more of that like critical.
Well,
like,
Grant's really funny in this scene because he's not that disturbed by the eggs, but he gets real mad when he learns they're breeding raptors because he hates raptors so much.
Well, I mean, I think to him it's making it clear that these people, they're making dinosaurs, but they don't understand dinosaurs that they're making, because, like, why would you breed a raptor? They're only doing it because they can. They're not thinking about, like, what would actually make sense, because this is just something that's going to threaten. Like, you can't, you know, how they talk it up in the beginning. It's so smart and this and that. And, like, it's just a risk, unnecessary risk to have a raptor there. So that, you know, is hinting to him that this place is not gonna pan out because they're going with things like this. And Let's see. You like the practical effects, Joe? Yeah, the little baby raptor.
Yeah, the practical effects is really good. It's like it reminds me of Alien, you know? It's just like a little guy coming out of an egg. We love that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And Hammond being like, oh, push, push. I'm like, shut up, Hammond!
Yeah.
Stop it! With your old man annoying. Chuckle. Let's see. We cut to they're going back to the entrance of the visitor center where Hammond's grandchildren, the often stated, you know, like targeted demographic children, arrive and you know, Lex and Tim get the intro to them. What?
That happens a little bit. There's a couple more scenes.
Okay,
we get
sorry.
That.
I'm going off the top of the dome. Let's
yeah,
see.
Yeah, yeah,
let's
no, I have no. So, let's see. This is what I got. We watched them feed a cow to raptors. Game warden Robert Muldoon is introduced.
Oh, right.
He tells them that the raptors are testing the fences and are much smarter as they seem. So he
That's
like knows
right,
that these things are like messed up.
Yeah.
Like they, he is like he shows up and he's like, yeah, they made these raptors. It sucks.
That's right. Yeah, they cut from the baby raptor to like, let me see what the raptors are looking like right now in the and yeah.
Yeah.
Savage. There's like this is just
they destroy
the same
that cow.
Worst enclosure. Like you can't see the raptor. There's no room. How are three raptors in there? It
sounds like they don't know what to do with them. Like they made them and they just don't
they
really know.
They should have just not done
it.
That.
Well, that's
yeah,
what,
well,
yeah
they,
that's what Grant is like. Why did you make these?
Yes. Well, we get the reveal that they bred eight originally, even though they're now still breeding them. So, like, what are you guys thinking? They bred eight originally, and then the big one, there's one called the big one. Even though there's no, like, physical distinction, and it's never clear, like, of the raptors we see in the movie, which one's the big one. But the big one, like, kills but all but two of the other raptors. So there's three raptors. I don't know why they're making more raptors. If they're just saying that thing to its death from the big one.
Yeah.
But
then there's
yeah.
a scene. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Then there's the scene where they eat lunch and they talk about business. And this is where Malcolm is like, you know, you guys thought it. You guys could, you know, you could do it. You didn't think about it if you should do it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Hammond's just like, but I'm just doing normal technology stuff, bro. And Sadler's like, you don't even know what these plants do.
Yeah. Yeah, basically just everyone is pointing out and Hammond is like in denial, like refusing, hoping he can still like turn the tide. Right? Because when he's over at the raptor enclosure, you can tell that he's like antsy and trying to distract them being like, oh, should we go get lunch? Because he knows... Because it's raptors are that killed that worker. So he's like, you know, it's like when someone is hiding something they know they shouldn't have. That's how they behave. And that's how he's acting
yeah.
with those raptors.
He's the most like shitty rich guy here where he's just like, why are all these scientists talking about ethics and safety? That's dumb. We should just do the thing. Like, come on, man. They should just let me do this. Why do we need regulations? We don't need that shit. That shit's dumb. Let me have my dinosaur park.
Mm-hmm.
Also, all of the plates have the logo on it, and it's great.
Yes, I want them. That dish set is sick. Anytime I say see Chilean sea bass on menus, I just think of Jurassic Park. Oh my god!
Yeah, and then after that is when Lex and Tim show up and they go into the cars.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So we get in the cars. Here's where they do like the park tour, where they have like the
Grant hates this kid,
vehicles.
By the way.
Yeah. Well. If you don't like kids, an annoying ass kid keeps pestering you and following you.
Well,
like, dude,
so,
get the memo.
Okay, but Tim shows up and he's like, oh, Dr.
He's
Grant,
excited.
I read your book. And Grant's like,
yes.
Oh, cool. And he's like, yeah, like, tell me some stuff about dinosaurs. And Grant's like, yeah, all right. And he intentionally gets into a different car than him. It's like he's not even being that annoying of a kid. He's like, I don't know.
Well, I mean... You would be like, oh, cool, this kid likes what I like. We have something to talk about. But also, like, you're literally running away from him and he's still following you.
He's a
oh,
kid.
God. And
That's
Ellie
fine.
Is, like, such a troll because she, like, sends Lex to say,
yeah,
like,
Sadler
oh, she said
Lex
I should.
To ride with Grant
yeah.
As a
she
joke.
She said it'd be good for you. Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yes. So, Yeah, so here's more of the, like, Ellie trying to push the kid agenda. And Alan being reluctant right now. We're divided up. There's two vehicles. In the first one, we have Gennaro, the lawyer, and the two kids. And then and the vehicle behind them, Malcolm, Sattler, and Grant. And so they take off. The first enclosures for Dilophosaurus, which is the venom spitting one. And in the tour, they have, you know, there's cameras in these things. So from the control room, Hammond and them. And we're introduced to Ray Arnold, who's another one of the, like, engineer room folks who clearly has, like, some opposing values, mindset to Nedry. They're clearly having to work together a lot, but back in the vehicles, the Dilophosaurus is a no-show. You know, for example, with, like, the whole they don't even know what they're doing and they're just making it and putting it in even if it doesn't work. But, like, the narrator on the little guide video is saying, like, you know, upon making them, we now know that Dilophosaurus's spit venom. And so they make a beautiful but deadly addition to Jurassic Park, which is like, don't add venom spitting dinosaurs. Like, it doesn't matter if they're in a, you know, what if your dumbass passengers roll the window down and they get splat by the dinosaur, you know, like, oh god, just clear, like, not more demonstration of the you didn't stop to think if you should, you only thought if you could, or whatever that line is by Malcolm. But yeah, just kind of like arrogance and thinking that you can control things like that.
Like making a theme park.
Just have a bunch of human eating dinosaurs, and like, look how, and people would still be psyched and you wouldn't have all these problems. Like, I'm assuming, because, like, I don't know how many dinosaur species had been discovered at the time that this movie came out, and I think a lot more have been since, but, like, are they just grabbing the ones that they can get their hands on? Clearly, they're not being very selective here. They, and, like, the scene where we first see the Brachius or whatever, they said that there's, like, 15 species. We don't see all 15 within the movie, but that there's 15 species in Jurassic Park, and I don't, you know, like, just, I don't know what the acquisition of DNA was, but, like, do they just take what they could get, and we're not selective at all, it seems.
Well, they're doing a theme park, right? You're being like, oh, this is a super dangerous dinosaur, because you're trying to, like, boost the, you know, the thrill.
Well, that's like a huge theme of the first Jurassic World movie.
Oh, okay.
Which also points out the, when, and, like, later in the Jurassic movies, it's like saying, like, oh, you know, it's just normal T-Rex doesn't do it anymore. We gotta, like, up the wow factor. But I'm like, we're starting from scratch here in the first one. Like, I think any dinosaurs would have been, like, enough. Oh, dear. But anyways, so no show for Dilophosaurus. We're trucking along in our cars, and Malcolm's starting to put the moves on Sattler some more, and also explaining what chaos theory is. It's like things like this where, like, Grant does not seem very threatened. Like, it's very clear Grant does not like Malcolm that much. It's clear that nobody seems to really like Malcolm that much, but and I guess he's just dismissing Malcolm, but, like, he's more focused on the dinosaur stuff. And as they're driving along, Grant hops out of the vehicle, and Ellie's like, what the hell? Actually, before there's this great line, something like, Ellie does this great line where he's like, man makes dinosaur, dinosaur eats man. woman inherits the earth.
God creates dinosaurs. God destroys dinosaurs. God creates man. Man destroys God. Man creates dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs eat man. Woman inherits the earth.
Which is like, oh yeah, it's that line.
This is when they stop. Like they stop because they're trying to goad a T-Rex out. So they just bring a goat up that's like tied to a post, and then nothing happens. And Grant's like, T-Rexes want to hunt. They don't want to be fed. And they all just sit there and watch this goat stand there.
Yeah, poor little goat. It doesn't go well for it. Vegetarian. No. So yeah, another no-show basically. Yep. Continuing on. Yeah, Grant hops out. Because it turns out he sees there is a...
The car is unlocked. You could just get out of the car.
Yeah! Which Arnold, who played by Samuel Jackson, which I guess before he became a big star, so this is probably one of his bigger first roles, being like, God damn it, or Muldoon being like, I told you guys to put locks on the doors, and... Just that, you know, we're getting the
just back. Like how not thought out things are.
Yeah, well, and that there's like a ton of bugs, and like I feel like a lot of things should have been established before they started making the dinosaurs. Like they should have gotten this other stuff figured out first.
Yeah.
And then done it. Not like simultaneously.
Well, this is like, I mean, this is like the big thing about like, oh, you're so like profit motivated and you're like trying to like make a theme park experience, you're not paying attention to simple things like do the cars lock.
Yep. And so they all gather around this triceratop, which is sick. There's Dr. Harding, which is one of the vets, tending to this triceratop. And Ellie Sattler, being the paleobotanist, is like, you know, this looks like maybe they're eating this poisonous plant, West Indian lilac. And a whole, you know, like thing of her kind of looking into it, and Grant having this nice moment because this is like was his favorite dinosaur growing up. And we're getting from the control room hearing that there is a storm approaching and that they're gonna have to cut the tour short. We see the weather kind of turning for the worst. Ellie decides to stay back with Dr. Harding. And the rest of the group get back in the vehicles, which is getting turned around. So we're going by the back towards the T-Rex enclosure. In the meantime, we get the whole. Let me see if I can get this right. Yeah. So we cut back to the control room with Dennis, being gripey about money and shit. It's okay. What do you think would have been the best? You've got this guy who like basically has your whole endeavor in the palm of his hands, complaining about not being paid enough. Like, what are we? Do you pay him more just to ensure that this all works out?
Yeah.
Or like he should just enjoy. Well, okay, because it's like
this is the problem because it's like it's hard to tell if Dennis's complaint is legitimate or not because we just don't know anything about how much anybody's getting paid or like what is going on or like what the contracts are or anything.
Yeah. Well, and like spare no expense is said so many times.
We spared no expense.
Which is clearly not true, right?
Yes.
So it's hard to know. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they make Hammond so likable makes this kind of like more difficult to parse because it's like if this was like any other movie or whatever, and he was just like the shitty boss, then like clearly he would be in the wrong. But because it's like Dennis kind of sucks, it's hard to know. But yeah.
At some point Dennis mentions when he bid on this job, which implies that a contract was put out and he bid on it. So, like, he signed up to be paid for this amount. It's not like he was... So he's just a contractor or something. He's not, like...
Well, yeah, but he may have not known how much stuff it was going to be. You know what I mean? Like, there's things that go
wrong. Yeah, there's probably a lot of NDA before he got fully on board and stuff. Yeah.
And the other thing that's going on is because the storm is going on, most of the staff has evacuated. So they're running on like a skeleton crew.
Yes. Yes. And so Dennis, you know, this is all going down. Dennis is like, gives the excuse, you know, gonna run a few things to fix some stuff. So if a few systems turn off, that's, you know, like, to be expected. Don't freak
out. He's so obvious about this.
He's so obvious.
He has like, no poker face.
Like, crazy talking nonstop without waiting for any, like, response. And but he kind of seems eccentric anyway, so I don't know. Or they all just hate him.
Well,
and, like,
it's also
don't
just like
listen to him.
The head IT guy is like, hey, all this stuff's gonna reboot. I'm gonna go somewhere else. Bye. And, like, these guys can't do anything about it. They don't know how to work any of this stuff.
Yeah, I know, because it's like, what is, like, Ray Arnold, like, what does he do versus...
Ray's the engineer. He's the chief engineer, which is, like, the mechanical stuff, right? So it's making sure all of that stuff. Dennis
so
is
like
the software.
Hard. Okay,
yeah. It's, like, more of a hardware-software stuff. So, like, that's why Ray, like, can do some of the programming stuff, but can't, like, get around the, like, hack he does, because he's like, I don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah, gotcha. Another like Ray Arnold doesn't get that much screen time. Hold on to your butts. Another iconic line from Jurassic Park from him. So many good one-liners in this movie. But yeah, so we have Dennis. Oh, sorry.
Do we want to go a little bit faster so we can kind of talk about the whole thing overall by the end? Because there's quite a bit of movie left.
Okay. Dennis rolls out stealing embryos. He's got a timer, so like all the systems are like he's like got it down to a T when he needs to be where so that he doesn't get caught on security cameras and blah blah blah. So he takes the embryos, stores them in the thing, and then so he's kind of like MIA because he's trying to get to the dock in time before the ship leaves. And so as he's doing that, things are getting shut down. You know, including electrical fences and important, you know, like, perimeter fences. And
so the sequence of events is like Dennis shuts down all of the security and communication things, but like the fences and stuff are still up in order to reactivate that stuff because Dennis has put on like a computer firewall thing. Everybody in the control room has to reset the power, essentially. They have to like turn it off and turn it back on again, and that's what cuts the power on everything else. But they also mentioned there's like a plan B where they can kill all the dinosaurs.
So okay, it's kind of like a weird thing that's brought up because this isn't brought up quite yet, but there's something called the lysine contingency where basically when they were like making the dinosaurs, they made it so that they were like unable to produce this lysine, what, like amino acid or whatever, like naturally, which they probably should be, but because they can't do it naturally, they're provided it by Jurassic Park and they wouldn't be able to encounter it like if they got off the island enough to sustain themselves, so they would like die if they ever escaped. So it's like to cover their asses if any of the dinosaurs ever got loose, is that they wouldn't be able to survive on their own unless they are provided that specific thing. But yeah, that's what that is. Maybe you take the second half. You'll be better at like going faster than me.
Oh, okay. Are you sure? Okay. Not, like, you're doing, okay.
No, I'm going too slow.
No, it's okay. I mean, like the second half of the movie is mostly just action scenes, so there really isn't that much to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, so the power goes out, not for everything, but for at least for the T-Rex exhibit. So the tour cars are stuck in front of the T-Rex exhibit. This is where we get the water ripple scene. Famous.
Well, yes.
Yes.
The tremors. So we basically hear the T-Rex moving. Tim finds this cool little helmet thing in his vehicle that has night vision. So he's just like looking around and then he sees The goat is missing. What happened to the goat? Thunk! Goat leg lands on the top of car one. Freaks him out. Gennaro, the lawyer's like, bitch, I'm out of here. He like takes off to the bathroom. And then Lex is like, oh my God, he left us. And then I don't think car two, which just has Ian and Alan in it, see what happened. So they're just like, where's that guy going? But then they see the fence wires breaking.
Mm-hmm.
We see the T-Rex emerge. Mm-hmm. It walks out onto the roadway.
Uh-huh.
And we cut to car one, where Lex is freaking the fuck out and like looking in the car for like things, I guess, to like help, and happens upon a flashlight. Bad idea, right? Because Grant in the beginning of the movie mentioned like, oh, you think maybe because it's like, maybe its vision is like a T-Rex, where if you don't move, it won't see you, implying that that's how it is for T-Rexes, which I think is like been debunked. That's not true, but in the movie, true. But basically that like draws the T-Rex's attention to car one. It starts kind of attacking that vehicle. Grant and Malcolm watch on like, oh my God. So eventually, Alan Grant, grabs a flare from his car, calls out, gets the attention, throws the flare off, and it was working. Like the T-Rex was going for it. And then Malcolm, you know, bless him, he's trying his best
it's
to
so
help.
Funny.
But so he also grabs a flare, and he's like, hey, hey, and he's like, get the kids. And he like starts running. But then it's like he's the thing of interest now, not the flare. So like he chucks the flare. T-Rex is coming after him now, though. So he like runs towards the bathrooms, clearly gets injured as the bathroom building kind of like falls apart, and perfectly leaves Gennaro on the toilet right front and center for the T-Rex, which snags him right up off that toilet, eats him. We have our first T-Rex death, and Malcolm's out for the count. Cut back to Grant trying to help Lex get out of the car first, because the car has been like flipped over and smashed, and you know, mud and stuff, so he helps her out first. And fun fact, this actress, she's specifically cast because they were like looking for someone who's really good at screaming. And so like once I think Spielberg heard her scream, he was like, that's the one. So she's just like letting loose with the screams back and forth. So T-Rex is back. That didn't take very long. Starts pushing around the car again. Tim is still in the car, so they kind of have to like, Grant tries to, you know, one kid at a time. So he's like, okay, I gotta get Lex out of here so then I can worry about getting Tim. They go off to, like, get off the road back into the enclosure. But the car gets pushed in there as they're coming down. The car's stuck in a tree. T-Rex takes off. And then we cut, I think, to the control room where, like, it's, you know, now they're aware of what's happening, and they're like, okay, I don't know what happened to Nedry, but like we can't get things back on track without him. I believe we cut to see, I'm like not looking at your thing. Basically,
you also are like
sorry. Okay.
I like how you're like, Joe, you do the summary, and then immediately you just
sorry,
go into the summary
sorry.
Again.
okay. What'd I miss?
No. You had it right. It's just that the control room guys realize that they tripped the breaker, and that's why the power is not coming back on. And so Robert and Sadler go out to flip it again so they can restart the power.
No, not yet.
I think no.
No, not
Am
yet.
I right? I'm pretty sure that's right.
No, we see that she has rejoined them at the control room, is freaking out that this is happening. And so her and Muldoon take off to go like meet up with Alan and them at the T-Rex enclosure. In the meantime, okay. Though, we see Nedry like trying to make it to the East Dock. He is like distracted driving, gets his car stuck, but basically like gets stranded.
Oh yeah, they haven't hard reset it yet. That's weird.
No.
Though. Okay, yeah, that just have... this doesn't make that much sense to me how the power goes out here and not no, other places.
No, basically, I think it's just that. Other
places.
But yeah, right, Nedru was just like, whatever was, I guess, he needed shut down for where he was going, so I'm assuming. And I've, like, seen, because there's, like, a maintenance road, like, near where the Tyrannosaurus Rex paddock is. So I'm assuming he was, like, probably in the vicinity, so whatever was attached to, like, the gates to get through also controlled, like, the T-Rex fences or whatever. So I think it's not, like, all the park, but, like, parts of the parks that he's needing access are down.
So,
and so
does
that's the T-Rex fence.
Is the T-Rex fence down, or does the T-Rex just break the fence like he doesn't care?
The fence was down.
Okay, but that but not
so
all the fences
out.
Are down.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Because later Muldoon will make a point that, like, even Nedry knew not to turn off the damn raptor fences. So, like, because or okay. else we would have had a raptor problem earlier.
Yeah. All right. That's interesting.
But yeah, so Nedry, he's having a whole thing. Basically, he encounters a Dilophosaurus and Nedry's out. He's down. Dunzo. Espionage foiled. And Sattler, Muldoon see one car missing. They see pieces of Gennaro. They find Malcolm, load him up. And then as they're about to head out, they Ellie finds the other car, sees. I guess we had the whole scene where, like, Grant went into the vehicle up in the tree to get Tim. They have a whole, like, oh my God, climb out of the tree before the car, you know, tense moment. But Alan and the kids escape alive, take off. So Ellie and Muldoon see that they got out alive. So they go to take Malcolm back to visitor center. But as they're leaving, we see the water tremors of the footsteps. Of mm-hmm.
We got the second one in the bottle.
T-Rex. Yes. So we see, you know, Muldoon, Ellie coming to the vehicle. T-Rex breaks out from the trees. And now we have the car chase. Which, at the beginning of the movie, they said the T-Rex can go 32 miles per hour, I think. Which, like, so car should definitely be able to outdrive them, unless it's, like, because it's a gas-powered Jeep, so it's not, I feel like they should have been able to outdrive it. But anyways, they have, like, a, you know, the object may be closer.
Yeah, that part rules. The object's
yes. Yeah,
that's really good.
So, very fun scene.
I also
eventually,
like the line. What? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Nope, you go ahead.
At the end, when Malcolm's like, think they'll have that on the tour, which is extremely
yes.
funny because every Jurassic Park ride and video game ever has that exact sequence in it.
Yes. Yeah, so Malcolm does not lose his sense of humor, regardless of the situation. But yeah, so they narrowly escape the T-Rex. They go back to the visitor center. Grant and the kids find a place to hide out for the night. Morning comes, you know, they have a nice moment with the T-Rexes, or sorry, the Brachiosaur, like just the herbivores. You know, Grant and the kids bonding moment.
Yep.
In the control room, they're like, okay, clearly Nedry not coming back. We gotta, like, what's the game plan here? And that's when they decide, like, okay, I can't undo this hacker stuff, so we're just gonna have to reset the entire system. And so they, like, flip the switch to do that, and it's clear that it worked, but the power's out because breakers or however electricity works or however that is. And that's when, Sattler and Muldoon are like, okay, or no, that's when, Arnold's like, okay, I just gotta go down the road, flip the breaker, and we'll be good. So he takes off to do that. We see Grant and the kids. Let's see. They discover the animals are, in fact, breeding on their own, likely because when they were going through the little tour of how everything works, it was shown that for gaps in the DNA, they substituted with amphibian DNA. And Grant goes into this whole thing of, like, oh, some African frogs are known to, like, spontaneously change sex in a single-sex environment. And so that's, like, what happened here. So Malcolm is right. Life found a way. And they're, you know, kind of on foot trekking back to the visitor center. They encounter like a flock of dinosaurs, Gallimimus. You know, fun scene there. And then another like T-Rex going after the Gallimimus. So they're like, you know, T-Rex still out and about. So they continue on their way back to the control room. Ellie and Muldoon are like, okay, Arnold's been gone too long. Something went wrong. We gotta go check it out. They, you know, have like walkie-talkies to communicate. And so they head out. And that's when we see that the raptors have busted out of their enclosure now. And that's probably why something went wrong. Oh God, so much talking.
Uh-huh, it's a lot, isn't it?
Oh my God.
You want me to do some of it?
But let's see. But yeah, as they're when they took off, yeah, Hammond, you know, giving Sattler like, oh, you're a woman, I should be the one doing it. And she's like, shut up, you dumb old man. And so they are close to where the breaker bunker is. And Ellie's like, oh, sweet, let's go. And Muldoon's like, hold on, wait a minute. We're being hunted. And she's like, ah, fuck. So he's like, I got it. You go ahead. I'll take care of this raptor. And so she like sprints off, gets inside. You know, she's getting the walkie-talkie instructions from, you know, old man Hammond, who can't do shit. And so Malcolm has to take over telling her how to get to it by reading the schematics. And we have Grant and the kids. They encounter a fence that they need to climb. So they start doing that because the fences were still down at that point. And then once Ellie finds like where the breaker stuff is, she starts flipping switches. Lights come on to where Grant and them are. Clear that the fence is about to turn back on. Freaking Tim, freaking Tim could have climbed. He could have walked straight through that fence. Those gaps were huge, and he was a tiny kid. He could just like slip right through the fence.
Those were not
100%. No,
like
he could have.
6-inch holes.
No, they were way bigger than that. Okay. So whatever. Also, just don't be slow. But anyways,
this would
he's
totally
like,
kill you, right?
I don't know. Probably.
It's like 10,000 volts.
Yeah. I don't know anything about all that, but yeah, basically, you know, that tense moment of like, jump, you know, you're not going to climb down in time, jump. Sattler flips all the switches. He didn't jump in time, so he kind of gets like zapped off the fence. Grant catches him. He's not breathing. So CPR, blah, blah, blah. Lex is freaking out. Ellie's like, oh, sweet, we're back in business. Lights coming on, all that. And then, you know, raptor comes out from over her shoulder, and she's like, ah!
Yeah.
She's very good at being, like, dramatically, like, crap, you know? So she's, like, running away. Raptor pursuing, kind of. She, like, has a moment of reprieve, and then, like, hand comes down, like, oh, Arnold, oh, thank God you're here. And then it's just as severed arm, and however that thing came from nowhere to touch her, his mangled little chewed up arm. But so confirmed, Arnold toast. So she escapes the bunker. Let's see, Grant is able to revive Tim, so they're back heading out. And Muldoon, who, you know, was taking care of the raptor thing, falls for the trap. He thought he was hunting a raptor. Turns out there's two. They set that trap. Another iconic line of clever girl.
Clever girl.
And he's donezo. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Grant and them get back to the visitor center. And he, you know, was like, okay, I gotta go find the others. So kiddos are snacking on all the melting ice cream and stuff because they, you know, clearly haven't eaten in some time. Alan's outside and encounters Sattler, and you know, they get caught up what's going on. Cut to the kids, and there's a raptor in there now. Because Riot Grant's like, okay, so there's only two raptors because one you closed up. And Ellie's like, yeah, unless they learn how to open doors. Of which, you know, the kids have taken off to the kitchen. And as she
cut
says
to raptor
cut to
opening
the-
a door.
Yes. Yes. So it calls for help. So two raptors now in the kitchen with the kids. Raptor versus kids. 1v1. So they both manage to. One gets trapped in like an actual door that they can't open because there's like a pin clip.
It's like
so
a
one raptor secured. Yes. In the freezer. The other one disoriented. So the kids take off, reunite with Grant and Ellie. They go to the control room to where, you know, like, oh, everything's back online, but the doors aren't locking because Unix system.
Okay, I need to talk about this Unix UI on this computer screen where they, like, fly in like, an animation to, like, touch the different, like, operating system folders. It's extremely funny. It's so good. To just like,
yes.
It's a Unix system. I know this because like Lex is a hacker or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like the system is so funny. Oh, it's
yeah,
so good.
Yeah, so this is the like kind of did not age well part, but also like in the tour when they were showing the like how stuff works and they're like, and our scientists with the VR.
Yeah, these VR
like, move the-
to so fill that in was the DNA part sequences. That, like, it's so funny.
Yeah, does not age well.
It's so good. No, it's awesome. It ages great.
but so okay, also big problem. Grant, Ellie holding the door closed, and Grant's like, grab the gun, and Ellie's like, I can't, you can't hold the door by yourself, but Tim's just standing there next to Lex doing absolutely nothing. He could have grabbed the gun for them, dumbass kid.
I mean, clearly the gun didn't do
nothing.
Shit. The gun never does. Nobody ever shoots a dinosaur in this movie.
But just saying that, that's a thing. okay. Anyways, Lex gets it because she's a cool hacker kid. Phones are online. They call the bunker that Hammond and Malcolm are at. Are like, hey, call for the helicopters. Get us out of here. And then Hammond hears gunshots and they're like, it's breaking through the glass. And so the raptor is further pursuing Grant and the kids and Ellie. So they like go up into the AC ducts, get back to that main lobby of the visitor center, climb onto the cool, like, I don't know, the like skeleton that's on display there.
Yeah.
The raptor jumps on, follows them, breaks. They all get to the ground. Surrounded by two raptors, and who saves the day but our T-Rex, Rexy, here, you know, conveniently somehow fitting into this building.
Hell yeah.
takes out one raptor. Yes, other raptor retaliates, and so the folks take off while that's happening. T-Rex finishes the other one as epically when dinosaurs ruled the earth banner flaps down, and then Alan and them reunite because Hammond and Malcolm are in the gas jeep ready to go. Grant's like, Hammond, I've decided not to endorse your group. And Hammond's like, so have I. And then we drive off, helicopters, we're saved, freaking take off into the sunset, Grant hugging the kids, and Ellie being like, look at you with those kids. That's daddy material there or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, yeah. Like, the movie ends.
Cut to credits.
Yeah.
All right, well,
all
thank
right,
you.
You talk now.
For that summary.
Long-ass summary.
I did not remember a significant part of this movie being about how Grant learns to like kids. That was like, I'm like, wow, we spent a lot of time in this movie. Also, like, a lot of this movie is, hey, is this kid gonna die in this action sequence?
Yeah.
Like, all the time, which is pretty good. Yeah. So I was surprised by that a little bit. I didn't realize it was, like, so prominently, like, the thing that happens in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess Grant's our main protagonist, so outside the issue of, like, surviving, he has to have some kind of, like, personal thing to
yeah,
grow on.
Yeah, it's the main, like, character
right?
arc, right? Yeah, that happens. Because everybody else remains pretty much unchanged.
Yeah. Character-wise. I will say as a kid, I feel like Ellie is like pretty funny, and I just like as a kid wasn't paying attention to all her fun little lines that she has, but Ellie Sattler rules.
Oh yeah, she's like constantly needling Grant. It's really funny.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so I guess what'd you think rewatching it for in its entirety for the first time in quite some time?
I thought it was good. I mean, I think they did like a good enough. They had like a really good balance this one in terms of like blockbuster actiony stuff, character stuff with like Grant or like just people being charming, like the actors being charming on screen, and then like this is a story about how like corporate interests dilute scientific endeavors for, you know, cynical profit reasons that, you know, lead to disasters, right? Which is like kind of the, I feel like the main thing, like the main theme or whatever.
Yeah, humanity sucks.
I don't think it's humanity sucks. I think it is about the humanity capitalism sucks. Part of it. It
is don't about- mess with Mother Nature, or Mother Nature is going to destroy you.
That is not
That's
what, this
what
is
I
about.
Took away as a child, and that is what I continue to.
I feel
think
like you're not getting the. I feel like you're not latching onto the capitalism part of this, the corporate interest place, the fact that they had to make this a theme park, which
but
is
that's
what
just
ruined
all
everything.
People. Anyone would be, you know, that's just how it.
That's not
what
all
you
people.
Mean?
What do you mean?
No. That's just how it would
it's
end up.
It's because Hammond's
right?
a rich guy and he wants to put on his little flea circus, but bigger.
Well, if it wasn't him, it'd be somebody else.
No, but this is what I'm saying. Like, if this was like Grant's theme park, if Grant was doing Jurassic Park, it would have been better. It would have worked.
Well, he wouldn't have done a theme park.
We wouldn't. This is what I'm saying. He wouldn't have had the capitalist interest of like, we need to make money off of this.
But like, okay, So.
You just know. I don't think so.
You can't change my 30 years of impression of this movie.
I just don't think this is emblematic of all of humanity. I think this is emblematic specifically
no
of
good.
Like corporate America culture.
He's from Scotland.
Yeah, but it's like I don't know. I guess I just figured it was an American company because
What do you think? I think InGen's a cool name for a company.
InGen?
Yeah, it's like gen for genetics or InGen for like ingenuity or something.
Yeah, I guess so. That's pretty good.
A cool name.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This
is good. I feel like the other movies are probably not going to have this much.
No.
Are going to have that to it. And I don't know. I'll be interested to see what they're like whenever we watch them.
Yeah. I like the next. I like Lost World, right? Like, because this movie is so good that Lost World, I think, just like people shit on it, even though it's not that bad, just because it was the, you know, successor to this movie that was so well received. You know what's great about Lost World is that there's a lot more throwaway nobodies, so that's more people being eaten by dinosaurs. Cause we all we lose Nedry, we lose Arnold, and we lose Gennaro. As like the cast that we know that we lose, so three people, and then like worker guy.
Dennis also dies.
Not, yeah. Didn't I say?
I don't know.
Dennis or Nedry or whatever I said. But yeah. So there's more expendables in the Lost World, which I'm all about. But we'll see when we get to that. But let's see. What are some fun facts I've got? The storm sequence that's captured in the movie was real. They were filming the movie, and a hurricane came through and like was wrecking the whole island. But Spielberg and some crew were like, "Let's get it, guys. Let's go capture that." So that's like real hurricane footage. Let's see. One day I will go on the Hawaii helicopter tour for Jurassic Park. And because that's where a lot of this was shot, in Hawaii. I don't know. Do you have like any questions? What could have been done differently?
No, not really. I mean, I think this movie is like pretty tight. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, everything kind of makes sense. I'm not really confused by anything.
There was one, like, CGI oopsie in the scene where the Gallimimus flock is going and the T-Rex comes out of the bushes. One of them, like, clips through the T-Rex model. So that's, like, one little technical issue that happened. And, yeah, but I feel like... Oh, and Grant... Right, the actor is not American, so he has, like, I don't remember what Sam Neill's accent is, if it's, like, Irish or Scottish or something, but he has an accent, and so originally they were like, okay, do, like, a Montana accent, and then I guess Spielberg didn't like it, so he's like, okay, never mind, just be yourself, and then he's like, no, I got this, and so his accent is kind of like a, well, you know, maybe undetermined origin, but, that was fun. And Spielberg was, like, filming this and then, like, right after or while this is still wrapping up doing Schindler's List. So, oh. Like, it was, like, a tight production schedule. And then he went from, like, this to that. So it was, like, quite the drastic, like, shift in directorial.
Yeah.
You know, product and. Yeah. I want all of the souvenir shop things we saw. Give me the lunch boxes. Give me the little toddler pajamas. I want them all.
So do you think it's ironic that, like, this is a movie about how, like, producing spectacle from something that should be, like, a scientific endeavor and, like, the branding, all that stuff is bad, but then also in real life, that's just what it became. It's just, like, it's a big brand franchise.
I mean... that's just reality, right? Like, it's just ironic, I guess. You're expecting deep thoughts from me, and that's a mistake.
No, it's just kind of funny. I don't know.
Who's your favorite character?
I mean, all of Ian's lines are very funny, even though he doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, I feel like he's, like, the popular character.
Yeah, I mean, I know think he's...
to me, I, like, admired Grant so much and, like, took a lot, like, of him as a character as a kid, like, so...
Yeah, but Grant's also,
like... Because he's kind
of, like,
a low-key protagonist. Like, he's not super... It's not, like... The new, yeah, well, it's not like the new movies where it's like, oh, your main guy has to be, like, a freaking action star, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's still, like, very...
That's what I really like about the first movies. That's, like, discovery and, like, the, yeah, like, the moral debate and stuff and not just, like, hot Chris Pratt can, like, you know, like, motorcycle with raptors, like, you know, things with, like, intention in this. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, Grant is, like, a very, like, a kind of traditional, like, masculine old school kind of guy, because he, like, doesn't really know, he can't really use technology or whatever. You see that, like, in the helicopter, he can't figure out how to, like, buckle his thing, so he ties it together. He's, like, outdoorsman-y kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But then he... lightens up for those kids, making him the perfect husband or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that'll kind of come up again in later movies, so something we'll talk about later, I guess. Look, I have like the shot from when the banner falls around the T-Rex I'm looking at right now. I have like countless Jurassic Park items, as you saw when you came and visited, but oh god. The best movie ever to me, but like if you had to give it on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it, do you think?
I mean, I really like it. Like, I, you know, this is like a really high quality movie, I think. I don't, you know, it's not like as like I guess thought provoking or something as like some other stuff. So this is like a 9 for me. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it is like an extremely solid movie.
Yeah.
You know, not surprising coming from Steven Spielberg, but like, yeah, extremely solid, very good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, John Williams smashed it out of the park with the soundtrack.
Oh, too. Yeah, I guess, you know, John Williams batting 1,000 all the time.
Yeah.
Dude's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah, because there's, like, a lot of... Like, the book ends very differently, because at the end of the book, basically, the Costa Rica government comes and, like, blows up the whole island. It's, like, the end of the book. But then Steven Spielberg was like, hey, make another book, which I think probably Brian was like, god damn it. Like, I just, like, blew up this whole island, man. Like, what do you want me to do? But, so, like, because I think in the original book, it was like, oh, Malcolm died, was, like, the implication in the first book. But, like, he becomes the protagonist of the second book. So, like, a lot of... So, like, the second book isn't as good as the first one, but also, like, the, like, it wasn't planned out. It,
right, yeah. Like, clearly.
It's a one-off, you know, but how you say no to Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it took him, like, 10 years to write the first book, and it must have been less than 5 for the second one, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
Because in the first book, it's, like, the story opens with, like, reports of these weird lizards on, like, attacking babies in Costa Rica. And, like, so it, like, starts with, like, the dinosaurs have already started getting off the island. And, like, that's, like, a whole thing happening in addition to, like, what's happening on the island at the time in the book. And, like, scenes unused, like, I think a scene that wasn't in the original book that a lot of people like was when there's, like, a scene where Grant and the kids are on a raft down a river trying to get past, like, a sleeping T-Rex, and the T-Rex, like, kind of gets into the water and stuff, which I think partly was inspiring a scene in Jurassic Park 3, but I think this new, right, because Jurassic World Rebirth, that's the new movie coming out in a few months. I don't have high hopes because, right, we've got more, like, big name actors like Scarlett Johansson being an action star, which, like, and then the plot is kind of silly. And Dominion was, like, kind of a disappointment. So I'm, like, very hesitant on. I mean, I'll always watch, like, dinosaurs doing stuff, but, you know, they'll never be as good as this first one. Because what I like about it is, like, all the newness of it, the unknown, which you just can't really get as much after the fact, but...
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Jurassic Park
1. We both liked it. Good movie. We'll have to figure out when we watch the other ones, because I feel like the other ones is where we're going to start to diverge in terms of, like, what we think about it, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, first one real good.
Yeah, let us know if it was, like, a disaster because I was running the ship here, or... Like,
oh no! I think you did a good job.
Joe talk more.
There's just a lot of stuff that happens, especially the first setup is really hard, especially because it's like, here's all these new characters, here's what their deal is, here's everything that's going on. When you watch the movie, like, the part we spent the most time talking about is maybe, like, the first hour of the movie or something, and then there's like another hour and a half that's just, like, action stuff. So,
But yeah, hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we appreciate you being with us for a whole year or, you know, supporting us, and, you know, no plans of slowing down. I've seen a few more little reviews come in, or ratings come in through Spotify, so thanks to you who are doing that. Don't neglect Apple Podcasts, you know, because that's where you can write nice little words of encouragement to us. Yeah, so watch. The huge, like, shared viewership of anime and Jurassic Park this episode is gonna change it all for us.
It's gonna make everybody watch Jurassic Park. It's just good.
That's right. Yeah,
so hopefully,
if you guys like Jurassic...
I
just have, like, a little shout out. If you guys like Jurassic Park and wanna, like, listen to more deep dive stuff, I highly recommend this YouTube channel called Clayton Fiordi, where he's, like, a super fan and, like, gets cool advice to, like, view things and, like, scripts for the movies, and talks about games based off the movies and stuff like that. So that's a really sweet channel to check out. But yeah, continue, Joe. Sorry.
Nothing. I'm just saying, you know, in this next year, I think we're going to try to do a couple more bonus things. So hopefully it won't be another year until we watch a Jurassic Park movie or something of that nature. So we're going to keep doing
it'll be
that
the entire year.
It'll be the entire
all year. Jurassic Park
annual.
Now we've got a few that we should do it all before the new movie comes out.
Yeah.
In June or July, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we can figure it out. We're going to figure out some stuff here. We're going to do some bonus stuff. We're going to try to add some more things to it. But in the meantime, we're going to keep watching Rose of Versailles. So that'll keep happening. So check that out. And I think that's it. Right?
Mm-hmm. I am so winded.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Oh my God, so much talking.
I know. It's so much, isn't it?
Oh boy, yes. Thanks for doing most of it most of the time, Joe. And hooray for Joe editing.
Yay.
Woo!
I mean, I've edited stuff before.
All right.
You know how it is.
Yes.
But yeah.
It's a relief to me.
That's true.
All right.
Okay. Well, take care, everyone.
We'll see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.